And welcome, everyone. Today's date is January 27, 2020. This is the regularly scheduled meeting of the City of Newport Retirement Board of Trustees. Just for purposes of the record, if we could maybe walk through the participants and identify who you are, that way the record will reflect that we have a quorum and who is here. I'm Braulio Escobar, and I'm here. Mr. Baker indicates he's here. Mr. Heater's here.
Steve Stewart's here.
Mr. Kaplan's here.
Nate Kaplan.
Steve is here.
Mark Phelan. Mark Phelan's is here.
Good morning, Mark. I don't see any members of the public either here in the council chambers or on the Zoom meeting. And so I'm going to skip over the agenda item for public comment. In the packets that were emailed to us, our fine staff provided us with minutes for October 28th and November 23. One of those was the special meeting that we had. Has everyone had an opportunity to review those?
Yes. I have November 21st and October 21st. You mentioned 23.
I have October 28, 2021, and
okay.
November 23rd.
Yep. Okay. I just had to open it. I was going by the title. Sorry.
So, the chair would entertain a motion for the approval of the minutes.
I make a motion to approve October and November's minutes.
Mr. Baker has indicated that he has seconded. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
We're not hearing Braulio.
Okay. Mike, do you have an announcement?
Yes. February 11th will be my last day here at the city. I'll be moving to the city of Philomath. Steve's going to step in and help out for the while until they figure out what they're going to do. So I just wanted to get that out so everybody knew. No surprises. So you heard it from me. I don't know if y'all have any questions or anything on it, but I'm ready to move to the actuary report and funding. So.
Well, this is a surprise that you're leaving. I don't want to steal any other thunder, but I know we have another staff member who will be leaving later on this year. You have been a steady hand for this committee during the time that I've been on board, and the committee looks forward to working with your associate, Stephen. And will Steve have the permanent position, or is it going to be open for?
As far as I know, it's hit the pavement, or it's the announcement or the advertisements out there.
Very good. Well, I look forward to being called in to sign your letter.
I won't be retiring. Just moving.
You're just moving.
But you still have to sign the letter.
All right. So Mike's made that announcement, and certainly we will miss his calm influence with our committee. We need to now move on to the actuarial report and the recommendation for future funding. And I think we would move on over. Would that be something Andrew will take over?
No, that's something the actuary put together. We've looked at the reports before.
Okay, can you run us through that, Mike?
Yeah, all right. The actuary gives us three options: 25-year amortization, a 20-year amortization, and a 10-year. Currently, we're paying $396,000 a year, which breaks down to $33,000 and some change each month. The actuary, everybody got the report for, and I didn't redo it. I should have. Shouldn't have brought my phone with me. They gave us new projections. For the 25-year it'll be $160,000 a month or a year, or $13,000 each month. Or you can do the 20-year amortization, which is $175 per year, or $14,000 per month. Or we stay with the 10-year amortization. We've been doing the 10-year amortization for the last, it seems like the last 5 years. The general fund and the funds this year are going to be stable going into the current year, or the current fiscal year, or the next fiscal year. I don't see anything, unless we have some other craziness come up like COVID or the unknown. We look to be stable on July 1st, so our beginning fund balances will be healthy.
And to your recollection, we've been funding on the 10-year amortization
for the
last 5 or 6 years.
Yep. And the new projection, remember now, we're almost 95% funded. So we need to put in $25,000 or $26,000 a month, which comes to like $310,000 a year. So that's the 10-year amortization, or you can go out to the 20 or the 25. But like I said, we've been doing the 10-year for the last 5 years.
Didn't we learn at one of our last meetings last year that we had gone from the 88% funding up to the 95% funding? Mr. Kaplan, do you have a sense of how the council would respond to this request for future funding?
I, to be honest, I don't. I'm new on the council, and I'm just trying to pick up what we're talking about, actually. So I don't think I could speak for the council at this time.
Yeah. David, do you have any comments?
No, but unless I hear something that would drive me away from it, I would say we continue to have been previously.
Stephen, do you have a comment?
Nope. I'm pretty new to this, but everything seems to have been working as it currently has been funded, so I wouldn't see doing any change.
Mark, you've been a council member liaison to this committee now as a public member. Do you have comments on the actuarial report?
Nope. Looks good to me.
Do I sense a consensus that we should recommend to the council to continue funding at the 10-year amortization, Mark?
Unless there's advice from the professionals otherwise, or Mike.
Mike, you have a comment?
I believe we should, keep going forward with what we've been doing it, because it keeps, you'll be on the same same plane for the next year. And like I said, the market really is, that's the big driver to keep the funding. And, don't look at the market right now. So hopefully, by July 1st, it'll come back to normal. But no, I think we should probably stick with the 10. Like I said, the finances look stable. I took a tea leaves class, but they didn't teach us everything. So
we've been funding for a 10-year amortization for the last 5 or 6 years. The state of the account is very stable. The projected budget for the city commencing July 1 again appears to be stable. And it's your recommendation that we make a recommendation to the city council to continue funding the retirement budget at the 10% amortization rate.
Right. Let's make sure we give a number so we can put that in the budget. So that budget, the number would be $310,119, which comes to $25,843 per month. So that would be a savings of about $8,000 a month.
Is there any, is there a motion or any further discussion? Mr. Kaplan.
Is it possible to give me a very brief understanding of the difference in of what we're...
You forgot, right?
Well, I knew it was sometime.
Do you need help?
No.
Make sure I'm...
Mark, we can't hear you. You sound garbled.
Oh, sorry. I should have been on mute. That was my wife checking in with me. Sorry.
Yeah, we can hear you fine now.
Okay.
I think Mr. Kaplan was asking for a little history and what the options really stand for.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, that's going to be hard to go into. Now, basically, what happens each year is on July 1st, we cut off our retirement contributions and everything, and we give them to our actuary. They go away, and you know, they project everybody's retirement. We've got God, how many people do we have? We have over 110 people on the account, and they've been here at various times over time, and they're going to retire at different times. So we have a fund, we have a defined benefit, which is obsolete after 2012. And then after that, it's all defined contributions. Anybody that's defined contribution basically will get their money when they leave. They'll get 85% of it, 15% next year after the actuary, because it's pretty complicated, Jan.
Okay. I don't want to hold everything up. Maybe I'll give you a call sometime, Mike, and just so that when it comes to the council, I'll be a little bit, I'm supporting of what you are, but that's personal. And in order to support it with the council, I just want to have a little more understanding. But I'll give you a call sometime.
So, Mike, what we're recommending is continuing to fund the defined benefit of portion of the retirement.
If I might interject here for a second, Mike, just given my understanding of the plan. Mr. Kaplan, there is a defined benefit plan for retirees. Then every 2 years, there's an actuarial analysis done. Every year? Okay, so every year there's an analysis done by a professional actuarial firm. And they come up with a report given assumptions on market returns and what the funding is for the retirement benefit, the defined benefit plan. And they say, based on our assumptions, it's X percent funded based on the obligations that we would expect to pay out. Okay. And so that number last time it was run was about 95%, a pretty healthy number considering a lot of different pension plans around the nation are significantly lower than that. The history of the account going back when we started managing it, it was significantly underfunded. Subsequently, it's been jumping around 80-90% over the last couple of times they've run that analysis. And so the question at hand essentially is, how much should the city contribute to the plan this year? And the discussion that was just had was saying, well, over the last 5 or 6 years, we've gone with a particular analysis number, what they call the 10% amortization. So there's different ways they analyze it and say, okay, if we fund it at this amount over the next 10 years, we can expect to meet the obligations for the plan. And so the 10% is a more aggressive, higher funding amount, and that's the one the city has chosen, or the one that the council has recommended to the city, because if the city has funds to contribute and the actuarial analysis is not, 100% or more, I think the history of the recommendation has been, if the city can afford it, they should contribute to the plan to meet the obligations for retirees. I hope that clarifies a little bit.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yep. We can't hear you, Braulio.
Excuse me. Years ago, the funding gap was down to about 74%. So the contributions that the city has made to the defined benefit program has made it stable. The city is going to be able to meet its obligations to its retirees. And I would hope that our committee would make a good recommendation to the city council for continued funding. And so at that point, Mr. Kaplan, have you had the nickel tour of the issue?
Yes, and that was very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And is there a motion from anybody? David Heater, can you hear me?
I make a motion to continue funding as we have previously funded.
And I'm not sure talking about the 10-year amortization program as explained to us by Mr. Mike Mazowski.
Excellent.
Do we have a second? Mr. Baker has seconded it. Is there any further discussion among this committee? It has been moved that we continue, that we make a recommendation to the City Council to fund the defined benefit program at the 10% amortization rate, as with the specific numbers as set forth by our finance director. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Is there anyone who is opposed to the motion? So let the record reflect that we'll make a recommendation, this committee will make a recommendation to the City Council to continue funding the defined benefit program at the 10% amortization rate with the specific numbers that the finance director will provide. Thank you. I'm done talking. It's time now for Andrew and your market review and liquidity report. Andrew, did you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So I'll run through the report that we typically look at. I'll try and condense my blabbing on about economic numbers. But in the interest of time, there are a couple of main points that I'd like to point out. So just as we've done in the past, I'll run through a couple of things. Economic growth, inflation's a hot topic right now, different elements of the economy, employment, federal funds rates. So all these different things are things that we look at. You know, we look at what happened last year, where we're at now, and where we think we're moving forward. And really the theme, overall theme here with many of these data points is last year was a pretty solid economic growth for the U.S. We're coming out of a pandemic-driven recession in 2020. But you'll see here, 2021, this actually was revised up this morning, 5.7% growth year over year for U.S. That's a really solid, healthy number. Over the last 10 to 15 years, the economic growth in the U.S. has averaged around 2 to 2.5%. So if you think on a historical perspective, largest economy in the world, we were chugging along at 5.7% last year. That's a really strong growth number. You know, something to be expected, though, given the amount of liquidity and stimulus that's pumped into the economy over 2020 and 2021, and coming off very low numbers from the pandemic year in 2020. Current estimates for GDP growth for this year in 2022, I've seen a range between 3.5% to 3.8%. So slower growth, but still healthy, you know, still higher than the average we would expect to see in the U.S. But then in 2023, still positive U.S. economic growth, but more getting towards normalized, what we would expect to quote unquote normalized growth here in the U.S., 2.5%. And so expectations are this is kind of the theme for a lot of stuff, particularly economic growth. We saw gangbusters, in particular consumer spending. You look down here at this number here, 8% year-over-year growth for consumer spending. I haven't seen a number like that. And, you know, you'd have to go back decades and decades to find that kind of consumer spending growth. So very healthy consumer spending last year, expected to moderate and get more towards normalized growth, you'll see here. The reason I point that out is because consumption is really about, you know, 68 to 69% of the overall GDP number. And so we're a nation of consumers, not necessarily savers. When given money, like we were with those fiscal stimulus checks from the federal government, consumers go out and spend and really is the driver of the economy. In many cases, consumers are in a better financial situation than they were before the pandemic. We're seeing all-time lows in debt service coverage. That's the percentage of disposable income that people have to pay their debt. You know, of course, that varies across the board. Some people are in worse situations, other are in more healthy situations. But overall, consumer balance sheets look pretty healthy. And so that's positive for economic growth and activity. Industrial production had a big year last year, over 5.5% growth. But again, moderating more closer to getting to 2.5% growth. So the name of the theme here really is still positive, healthy growth for the U.S., but moderating, getting closer back towards normal. And I would expect that because we're not going to see additional federal stimulus checks that we saw coming from the federal government, pumping up consumer balance sheets again, but some of that money is going to be continuing to flow into the economy moving into this year and next year. Likewise, the Federal Reserve, which I'll touch on in a moment, is still fairly accommodative, but they're expected to increase interest rates, so getting less accommodative than they have been in the past. I'll quickly touch on inflation. That's obviously got a lot of headlines, and everyone sees it from day to day, whether you're going to a grocery store or filling up your gas tank or looking at your rental, you know, the cost of housing. So, yes, inflation is very high, numbers we haven't seen here. CPE and PCE are both measurements of inflation, consumer price index, and personal consumption expenditures. But similar theme, we're seeing kind of eye-popping year-over-year numbers here, 7% inflation. Yikes, we haven't seen that going back to probably 1982, I think. PCE, I think, is like 30-year high. This is a concern for investors, and I think that's why you're seeing the Fed come out and say, look, we're going to unwind our bond buying program quicker, and we're going to ratchet up interest rates likely in the middle of March is when they'll begin, because that's part of the Fed's mandate is they need to try and keep inflation under control. A lot of different things are impacting inflation, but I think when history looks back on this time period, likely going to put it in economic textbooks, because it's a classic example of supply and demand imbalances. You have, on one hand, supply chain issues around the world caused by the pandemic and a number of different issues, including employment difficulties. So the supply side of the economy was strained at the exact same time that demand boosted up, primarily driven by the federal stimulus that was given by the federal government to consumers. So when consumers got these federal stimulus checks, no surprise, we're U.S. Consumers go out and spend their money. So you have more dollars chasing fewer goods, classic imbalance of supply and demand. So as a result, you'll see prices go up because there's more demand for less things. But again, same thing, moderating, still kind of elevated this year. We expect, you know, the Fed to ratchet up interest rates and some of the supply chain issues hopefully getting resolved towards the back half of this year and into next year, getting closer to, you know, quote unquote, normalized inflation. So we hope inflation is going to get back towards the money. Economists believe it's going to get more normalized. It might hover above the 2% target that the Fed really has for interest rates or inflation. But I think they're okay with that if it's hovering between 2 and 3, because for the last decade or so, we've actually been averaging less than 2% inflation. So we've been below average inflation for over a decade. So also why it kind of consumers feel the sting now, because we've been kind of spoiled with low inflation for, you know, 10 to 12 years. Unemployment's an interesting dynamic there. The unemployment rate has come down to about 3.9%. So pretty healthy unemployment rate. If you recall, pre-pandemic back in February of 2020, the unemployment rate was at a near all-time low at 3.5%. So we're still not back there. I think we still have at least 2 million more jobs that need to be filled to get back up to the number of jobs we had pre-pandemic. As you may know, there's a number of different dynamics going into that. People hesitant to come back to the workforce, whether it's finding difficulty finding childcare, whether they already have a two-income household, maybe they have figured they can manage with one income. Early retirees, I think it forced a lot of people to say, look at their financial situation and say, you know, housing has been okay. My retirement accounts have done okay. Maybe I'm comfortable retiring earlier than I was. So there's a number of dynamics driving that with unemployment being low, but still difficulty finding enough workers to fill the job openings. I think there's over 10 million job openings right now, and less than that number of people actually looking for jobs. So there's an imbalance there, and that's going to be continuing to see kind of businesses struggle with that moving into this year and next year. I mentioned the Fed likely to ratchet up rates. We think they're going to ratchet them up. Estimates are between 3 to 5 different rate hikes. You know, they'll probably increase 0.25%. Some economists are calling them to ratchet it up 0.5% to move quicker. So I think they're going to be patient, but they are expected to increase interest rates. That'll impact short-term rates, not necessarily long-term rates. So even though they ratchet up their short-term rates, which they call the federal funds rate, The 10-year bond yield here, it's hovering just below 1.8% today. It's likely going to end the year a little bit higher, but not a whole lot. So, you know, between 2%, maybe even 2.5%, but probably around 2%. Mortgage rates are closely tied more with the 10-year bond. So even though the Fed's increasing interest rates, I wouldn't expect mortgage rates to go up significantly higher, which would bode well for the housing market moving forward as well. I'll pause there, see if there's any questions.
I guess, Andrew, my only question would be, I read an interesting article in Economist magazine yesterday. What do you see happening with what might happen in Ukraine and how that might affect investments?
Certainly. Whenever there's geopolitical events, that tends to spook investors. So as I explained this to another one of my clients this week, yes, it'll cause, you may see some additional volatility in the markets. I would say we're already seeing that volatility here this week. It's been a very volatile week. But at the end of the day, that conflict really doesn't impact U.S. consumers. It might impact some companies that have exposure to Ukraine, but overall, from an economic standpoint, it wouldn't really impact U.S. consumers from going out and spending. It'll likely receive a lot of headlines. You might see a little volatility in the markets, but at the end of the day, the U.S. economy is still on solid footing, and it's not going to be impacted from something that happens in eastern Ukraine. That's kind of my opinion on it. You might see extra volatility, but at the end of the day, it's not going to derail the economy or drive the U.S. into any kind of recession or anything like that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Andrew,
good question, though.
Over the last few weeks, we've been hearing and reading about the market moving into a correction territory. Could you explain mm-hmm. what that means and how it's going to impact the City of Newport's retirement funds?
Sure. When people talk about a correction, that's typically when the market moves from its most recent high down 10% or more. And so they call that a market correction when it moves down 10%. We saw that in the NASDAQ, which is the index really heavily in large cap growth tech style funds or companies. And, that just means, okay, there's been a move of 10%. That's not unusual for the stock market. Over the history of the last, 50 years, we've seen significant sell-offs, even some a lot more than that. You think back to February and March of 2020, a significant sell-off. How does that impact the retirement plan? Well, it's another bump in the road, just like the ones we've seen back in 2020. We saw a sell-off in the end of 2018. Of course, we went through a great financial crisis back in 2007 and 8. My advice to investors is to hold tight with your strategy. Don't try and time the markets and jump out, especially now that we've seen a significant pullback. If anything, we think there's buying opportunities for many different companies here. And so we're confident that the U.S. economy is still going to be healthy. We think corporate earnings is still going to continue to grow, albeit not as fast as we saw last year, but still a solid, probably single-digit percentage growth in corporate earnings. And so that bodes well for equity or stock investors moving forward. If we have a healthy economy and we have healthy corporate earnings, stocks are still a good place to invest. Also to note, stocks have also historically been a good investment during times of high inflation. Oftentimes companies can pass on the cost increases to their consumers. And you also have to keep in mind, what other alternatives do you have for investment other than sitting in cash or a fixed income? So the bond market is at historical low interest rates and going to move up. When interest rates move up, bonds, the value of bonds typically moves in the opposite direction. So it's an inverse relationship. Interest rates go up and bonds go down. So we might see some negative returns in the bond market again this year. That would be the first time that would happen in 2 years in a row. But we do advocate a balanced portfolio because we like to balance out the risk we take on the equity side with kind of the lower volatility that we would have on the fixed income or bond side of the portfolio. So if you're looking at your retirement accounts or, you know, you're looking at other investment accounts, my advice would be to hold steady. We think, you know, there's a number of stocks that have oversold at this point. And when markets move or bounce back over the last decade, they've bounced back very quickly. If you just look back to 2020, from March to about July, the market bounced back quickly. So we expect to see volatility here this year. We're not surprised to see markets go down, but you know, we'll see how it shakes out between now and the end of the year. This is just the first month of the year, but we're still pretty confident we're going to have positive stock market returns at the end of the year.
Do other members of this committee have questions for Andrew?
I will move on.
Very good. Move on and run through the rest of your report, sir.
Sure. So here's a summary. As we discussed a little moment ago, there is a defined benefit plan or trust, and then there's a defined contribution trust. So this is the defined benefit one. There's the growth account, which holds most of the investments. And then there's a very small, what we call a liquidity account, which just holds temporarily funds that are going to be distributed over the next 3 to 6 months. And so you see here at the end of the year, the balance in that particular defined benefit trust was a little over $10 million. And so that's the account we were talking about, Mr. Kaplan, that the council's considering funding. As Mike mentioned, the defined contribution, those are contributions that the city puts in. And that's, if you think about this defined benefit's more like a traditional pension plan, whereas this is more like a defined contribution retirement plan. So for each of these, we have a report that shows the performance and the allocation. I'll run through this real quick. So in the capital growth account for the defined benefit, we really are managing these in what we call a balanced style portfolio. So you often hear that referred to as a 60-40 mix, or 60% equities, 40% fixed income. So pretty close to there, you know, almost 60% equities here and close to, you know, 38% in fixed income. And we do have a little small allocation, 2% to a real estate strategy. So a little bit diversification there. But the overall story of last year was equity markets did very well. And so that was really the driving force for any type of portfolio returns. I'll go over the year-to-date column. This is the same as the one-year column here. So you'll see the total account return was 10.43%, primarily driven by equities. Equities in the portfolio were up 17%, a little bit shy of the overall all-country world index, which is up 18.5%, but still pretty healthy equity growth. Fixed income, we were a little more conservative in our allocation, you know, virtually flat returns there. But I would note here the Barclays Bloomberg U.S. Aggregate Bond Index, minus 1.5%. So the overall bond market index, negative on the year. Alternatives, this is that real estate strategy. So real estate had a great year and paid off having some of that in the portfolio as well. So 18%, almost 19% returns there. Then each of the columns to the right of here, 3-year, 5-year, 10-year, and inception to date, this shows you the long-term averages, annualized averages. So on average, since inception, what has been the returns for the portfolio? So going back to October 2007, about 6.6% on average per year has been the overall portfolio return. Not surprising, great equity market or stock market returns over that time. So the portfolio stock returns have been about 7.6. The global index has been about 6.5. Fixed income returns for the portfolios average about 4.6, a little bit over the index over that time period, 4%. So give you an idea of, okay, how did this year compared to the overall average? Well, I would say 2021 was a great year, you know, almost 10.5% returns when we typically average 6.5. So a good year for especially in equity investors. Any questions on that page? I like this page in particular because I think it paints a picture of the value of investing over long periods of time and really sticking to your strategy, not trying to time the markets. You may recall this portfolio started way back in 2007. So I'm looking at this inception to date column. I think this really tells the story. There was an initial portfolio value, a little over 500,000. Since that time period, over all the years, there's been about 4.3 million put into the account. So if you combine those two, you're looking at about 4.85 million or so, a little bit more than that. Think of that as all the funding that's come into the account. But over that time period, we've had income earned of about 1.3 million. And then market appreciation, which has primarily been the returns from the stock market, about 3.5 million earned there with the ending portfolio value here at about 9.7. So over that time period, as you would expect, certainly the goal is to meet the obligations for the pension plan to pay out, but also grow the portfolio to meet the demands or the future obligations as well. And so down below, we have a comparison for a kind of a benchmark CPI, or that's inflation. Well, the investment policy statement calls for, we'd like to outperform inflation by an additional 3%. And so over the long run, that's ultimately the goal. You can see 6.6% above that benchmark at 5.16%. This growth of a dollar chart here below, this says, okay, for every $1 that's invested in the portfolio, how did it match up against the benchmark over time? You'll see significant, correction or bear market actually back in the great financial crisis, but continual portfolio growth throughout the years. And ultimately, the goal is to be up and above that benchmark. Page three of the report's interesting. I like it because it tells you a little bit closer look at, okay, what are some of the strategies that performed well? So the top 10 performers for the year last year, we had quite a mix here, but all primarily U.S. Stock strategies. So we have a mid-cap or mid-sized company strategy. It's mid-cap value, large-cap growth. So tech stocks did great last year. So did large-cap value stocks. That's at J.P. Morgan. Another small cap value did very well, and that real estate fund I mentioned before as well. Really much better equity market returns here in the U.S. than we saw in our international. Some of our international strategies didn't do as well as we expect. But moving forward, we continue to examine that and make adjustments as well. This page is just a quick look at the liquidity account. It's primarily some exposure to fixed income or very short-term bond exposure and also cash. So it's really just a holding place for funds that are going to go out. So nothing exciting to look at here. The next three pages is for the defined contribution trust. So almost identical here because we manage this account hand in hand with the capital growth account for the defined benefit. So you'll see here close to 60-40 mix, or 60-38-2, that 2% being the real estate. 10.43, so I think that's the same type of returns we'll see there. 17% returns in equity for the year. Again, virtually flat with fixed income, a little bit to real estate at 19. But similar like returns over the time period, a little over 6% returns on average per year over the time period, primarily driven by equity market returns. With fixed income holding up pretty well as well. So very similar like returns we see in this portfolio. This is the same kind of story here for defined contribution. So you're looking back at the history of the account, funded with about 3.2 million. Over that time period, 2.587 has come out of the account. But we've had income earned. We've also had market appreciation over that time period. With the net result, 4 million. So up and above beyond what's been funded and taken out of the portfolio. Certainly that's the goal, meet obligations for retirees, but also outpace inflation and an additional 3%. This will look virtually identical to the previous one. The top 10 performers here, again, driven by U.S. equity strategies, mid-cap value, large-cap growth, large-cap value, small-cap value, real estate, about the top five performers there. And that's all I have. I'm open for any questions.
I think in summary, you're saying 2021 was a good year, that the allocations that your firm has suggested to the city and this committee are within a normal range. We're doing well. Don't panic with a correction. Stay the course.
That is correct. Yeah, we don't advocate any major asset allocation changes at this point. You know, keeping a balanced portfolio, we think makes sense in this environment.
Does any member of the committee, don't forget to press your button if you're here, but does any member of the committee have further questions for Mr. Haggerty? John, I thought you had a question. Mark, do you have a question? Mr. Kaplan? Steve? Mr. Kaplan, I didn't mean to cut you off.
I'm good. Thanks.
From my perspective, it's a fairly strong report that Mr. Haggerty has shared with us today. Steve, on behalf of the city employees, I notice you have your beaver gear on today.
No, sir. That's public works.
Okay. good to see it there. Do you have any questions for Mr. Haggerty?
I do not. Everything looks good.
I would mention one thing. Every 3 years, we revisit the investment policy statement. So I believe Kay included that attachment on the email she sent out. No major changes that I looked at in there. I'm going to try and can you guys see my screen here as well?
Yes.
Okay. So it's very similar to the last investment policy statement. There's only one minor change that I had in here. So the asset allocation ranges are all the same. You know, we advocate, you know, there's ranges here for equities, fixed income, and we manage within those ranges if there's drift in the portfolios. So we're still advocating that balanced portfolio mix for both of the growth accounts. The only minor change here was previously this particular line item that says, hey, we're going to limit an exposure to any one particular mutual fund or ETF to 25%. Or strategy, just bumped it up to 30%, gives us a little more flexibility if we wanted to be in one particular strategy. So that's the only real change. I wouldn't say there's any major change here, but if the committee wanted to review that and then have someone sign it and get it back to us at your convenience, that would be great, just so we can update our records.
Would it be okay if the committee were to examine this report or that you've generated, we can then have further discussion on it and approve it or have comments on it at our next meeting in April. Would that be okay, Andrew?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right.
That's the question I had that was just examined, and I think a little session where we talk among ourselves about it would be very helpful. But we started out this program, I think, maybe 16 years ago or something when I first joined it. And what we were always conscious of is we wanted more dollars to come out of earnings through our investments and not so much out of the tax dollar. That was kind of an important understanding for everybody, because it was before, it was more dollars out of the tax dollars. And it's really nice to hear that we're kind of thinking about, there's a kind of an ongoing good eye towards what the investments are doing. So that's good. Thank you.
So what I would do is ask our staff. I have a copy of Andrew's suggestions there, but if we could ask the staff to make sure everybody on this committee has this this new report or this new allocation recommendation from Mr. Haggerty. Send it on out in the mass email. If we could all kind of review it, and we can put it on as an agenda item to discuss and consider at our next regularly scheduled meeting, which is April 28th, 2020. Does that sound fair to everyone?
Yes.
Yep, I already have it.
I already have it also.
Yeah, Kay sent it out with the minutes and everything.
Very good. Now, Gillian, Ms. Eubanks, do you have anything you wanted to share with us today, or are you just here to watch us?
I'm just participating. I've taken a few notes. I don't think there's anything really that I have to share, but always happy to be a part of the meeting.
Thank you, and for hanging in with us while we had our technical difficulties. Our next agenda item is the
problem.
Our human resource lady just left us. And so the next agenda item was a report on upcoming retirements. And Mike, could you fill us in on that?
Yes, we have one retirement coming up. She's been here, I think she's just, we got an issue on how we're setting up her retirement. So I need to talk to Barb. But we have one at this time, and her bank is not that big. So I'll leave it there, but I'm just texting Barb saying I just thought about her, and I need to talk to Barb about how we're approaching her retirement, because I think she's a defined contribution, not a defined benefit. So, like I said, I need to talk to Barb.
Well, if there's any action the committee needs to make, you'll let us know. Thank you, Mike. Now, we've been talking to, I take it this is going to be your last meeting with us. Do you want to introduce Steve and let Steve say a few words to the committee so we're familiar with him by next time? Sorry to put you on the spot, Steve.
All right. Anyway, Steve is going to step in until they fill the position. He's, I'm sure, going to apply for it. Steve's been here, 5 years? Yeah, a little bit over 4. So he's done great work for us. Going to miss having a person like that in my future office. I keep telling him he's like a godsend to me. When Linda retired, I needed somebody that could do everything so I could kind of go on and do other stuff and like get the retirement committee back online, and that took a while. And Steve's done a really, really good job, so he's probably going to do a good job as being a finance director if he chooses to go down that road. Anyway, I'm going to put him on the spot like Braulio just did. Steve, you have the floor. Introduce yourself.
This is Steve, the assistant finance director. So, I've been very happy working with the city of Newport, so I hope to continue and kind of grow professionally too. So, nothing much else to say there.
Well, welcome.
Welcome, and you have some pretty big shoes to fill, and so help keep us on a steady course. In terms of, I'm going to let the staff discuss developing the next agenda. We know that we're going to have our quarterly investment report. I know that we're going to discuss Andrew's report about how we're going to allocate things and how much can go into any specific fund. Any other developments that come up, there'd be a human resources report and any other items that would need to come up on the agenda. If there is an agenda item that any member of the committee would like added, contact Kay and we can put it on and add it as a discussion matter. Now, our next meeting is scheduled for April 28th, 2020. April 28th, 2022. I guess that's a sign of my early onset. But just so that you can fill out your calendars, we meet quarterly. And so all other things being equal, our next meeting will be the end of April, April 28th, 2022 at 10 o'clock. The next meeting after that would be in July, towards the end of the month, July 28th, 10 o'clock, 2022. And the last meeting for 2022 would be the end of October 27th. So basically, we're meeting quarterly. We've just had our January meeting. We'll meet again in April. We'll meet again the end of July, and we'll meet again the end of October, just so that you can kind of fill in your calendars. Now, Kay, you have to press your button if you're going to talk to us.
I want to state that I handed out a calendar today, and I will send that to everyone so they have that.
Very good. If there's no other, Mike, you have a question.
Not a question. I just want to say thank you for all the good work everybody has done the last 7.5 years. I know the retirement committee was really almost non-existent when I first started, and the money going to Columbia Trust was almost non-existent. It was getting there, but it was getting there in bad, just not on time. So I appreciate everybody's hard work and putting up with a lot of the stuff that Spencer and I put you through. I mean, we did a complete rewrite of the retirement books. Jan, they're online if you want to read them. We've got a detailed version, and we got a Cliff Note version. Recommend the Cliff Note version first.
Michael, you're showing your age when you talk about Cliff Notes.
I know, isn't that amazing? I know, I hate doing that. But anyway, I do want to say it's been great. I mean, it took us a while to get it online, and it's been humming along for the last 6 years. And I really appreciate everybody's work, especially John. John's been here almost like, forever. He's been here the longest. Yeah, I know. John's one of the initial ones. I mean, and Andrew's come on in the last 2 or 3 years. I've done great work. And Jillian's also been awesome, too. So when I've got questions on anything, they're there. I mean, I've been showing Steve all the ropes on where everything's hidden for Columbia Trust and told him call Jillian or call Andrew. So anyway, just wanted to say thank you all. I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the service you've done for the city. And I'm going to miss this. I don't have this kind of committee at Philomet. So anyway, just want to say sayonara and thank you very much, y'all.
Thank you, Mike.
Well, Mike, this is thank you for the service you've given to the city of Newport. You're definitely leaving it in a much better place than you found it. And I just know for myself personally, I just wish you really good luck and Godspeed in your next adventure.
And on that positive upbeat note, I'm going to adjourn our meeting. Unless there's other discussions, I'm going to adjourn the meeting, and I'll see all of us again, hopefully in person or hybrid. See us all again the end of April. That's April 28th, 2022 at 10 o'clock. Thank you.
Thank you, Braulio.
Thank you.